This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We've seen a lot of change since May 9th, lots of reform happening, and even our first female deputy prime minister coming to power. We also remember that one of the main thrusts of the Pakatan Manifesto was to take care of the welfare, health and rights of women. This Sunday, a forum by the G-Blog, Art for Grabs and UNICEF Malaysia is set to discuss a fundamental aspect of women's rights, safety. How safe is Malaysia Baru for women? And how can we make it more conducive for women and girls to thrive in? And joining me to discuss this and more are Amelia Sharif, the Chief Executive Editor of the G-Blog, and Chang Mei Yen from Young Women Making Change Malaysia. And Amelia is going to be the moderator for that forum, and Mei Yen is one of the panelists. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Hello. We're good, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining me today. So, Amelia, we last spoke before the elections, just before.
Yes, we did.
You know, apalagi Wanita Mau, we spoke about it. How are you feeling?
I think there's a lot of hope and things that people kept thinking about since before the elections, and all these things are carried forward. And I think a lot of Malaysians, including myself, we feel very hopeful. Mm-hmm. It's not just because there's the new government in place, but also because a lot of the things that are promised in the manifestos are things that, you know, we've been asking for quite some time. So I think aside from just being hopeful, we are also, I think, in suspense to see if all of the things that are promised are being done. And I think this is where a lot of us are, you know, playing our part in terms of like doing our lobbying and talking about the issues that truly matter.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little, I mean, just for people who don't remember, please remind us what the G-Blog is and, you know, what it is that happens there.
Right. So the G-Blog is a multifaceted platform that seeks to enrich the discourse surrounding the various intersections of gender issues in Malaysia. So we're very proud to bring and publish stories in relation to the various aspects of gender issues. So usually when we talk about gender issues, people think, safety, sexual harassment or domestic violence. Those are important issues. But on top of that, there are also other issues that we talk about, like economic policies, women in leadership. Sometimes it's even something very personal, like abusive relationship and, like, you know, power dynamics in relationships. So those are the things that the G-Blog are very interested in terms of, like, publishing and talking about.
I mean, just very real issues that women face.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not just women as well, right? It's other communities as well that are...
Yes. Because we try to be very diverse with the kind of coverage. So when we talk about these issues, it's not just that they impact women, although we need to recognize that most of the time women are the biggest victims of a certain kind of crimes, like catcalling, right? Mm-hmm. But it is not impossible. And there are also cases of these things, you know, happening to like other minority groups and even men. So
exactly.
We don't exclude anyone from the discussion.
Very all-encompassing, very welcoming group. And Mecha, maybe we can get to know you a little bit better. You are part of Young Women Making Change from Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
So it's actually a collective started by Empower. Mm-hmm. Empower, the women's NGO. Started to build up young women to advocate and campaign against sexual harassment. One of the main thrusts of our collective was to lobby for a sexual harassment act to be in place.
Yes.
We have been working on different things, including raising awareness on sexual harassment and helping women NGOs draft a sexual harassment bill.
And I understand you've been quite involved in that whole process as well.
The drafting process.
Tell me a bit about that.
So actually, you have to go quite far back. Actually, the women NGOs have been advocating for a sexual harassment bill or something against sexual harassment since, I believe, the 1980s. Mm-hmm. There were codes of practice put in place based on their advocacy, but around 2001, they did try to lobby for a sexual harassment bill to be put in place. Around 2002, they have drafted a bill and submitted it to the Women and Family Ministry back then.
Yeah,
I believe it was almost successful, but at the last minute, due to some lobbying from some parties, it wasn't passed as law. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a bill drafted since the early 2000s.
Early 2000s, wow. That's almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's almost 20 years. And we've been trying to push for a bill like that since even way back then.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, 2017, several women NGOs were approached by, after discussions with the Ministry of Women, They were informed that the ministry has now renewed interest in such a bill. They were asked to draft, so I came into the picture at that point with several other young women in my collective to help the Women NGO draft some update that 2001 sexual harassment bill for modern context, and so that it's more all-encompassing.
Okay, and this was in the previous administration. So this is 2017, you mentioned.
2017, this was the previous administration. So, okay. But I believe the current administration is also is one of the top priorities to address such a matter, given, I believe, the recent orthopedic surgeon case.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Right. So, that was actually going to be my next question. You know, Mimila, before the elections, we spoke about, you know, the importance of getting more women into power and in positions in the cabinet. And I mean, how are you feeling about our current cabinet lineup, which didn't quite make that 30% that we were hoping for?
Well, I think I'm just going to say it. It's quite frustrating because I feel like before the formal lineup was named, I think there's some lobbying by the women's group as well.
A lot of lobbying,
There was like petition. People were talking directly to the people, in charge to say that, you know, this is the right time. Since even like in your manifesto, you make such a big deal about this, you know, 30% women representation of women in leadership position, right? So I think, honestly, it feels like it fell short of that promise, and it's very frustrating. But obviously, my personal view on this is obviously we can't just stop because, you know, they can't meet that 30%, although I don't buy that argument that they can't meet that 30%. So there's also a lot of discussion among women's group because the thing is the standard that's applicable for women leaders, right? So, and this is the conversations that we've been having ever since, mm-hmm. right? So people say, well, of course they will name this male person A because, you know, he's very deserving of this post, right? He's good. And, you know, women's organizations say, what about this female person A who is, like, deserving? And I remember vividly a conversation that I had with someone who said, no, if you want to convince me, this person is not in the position of putting people in power, but it was more of a general conversation. And then the logic was that if you want to replace this leader from a male leader to a female leader, this female leader has to be better than the male leader. And I was like, no, at best, they have to be equally good. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? So I think, unfortunately, that's the kind of stigma that people have over female leadership. And I think that's kind of frustrating for me and to listen to people say these kind of things over and over again.
Yeah, it's like a global phenomenon though, isn't it? If you're a woman leader, you have to be, 100%. Oh, no, okay. Like you have to be 50% better than your male counterpart, for example.
Yeah. And it's not just politics. It's any leadership position. You have to be above and beyond, which given the fact that women culturally are still expected to do a lot of caring work, household domestic work, it's quite unfair. It's quite an uneven playing field that we kind of have to
keep fighting against.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate and it's true. But how did you feel about that, Mayen, about the promise that was not fulfilled, that lack of 30%?
I find it puzzling because obviously, without going to statistics, 50% of the population is female. And the promise wasn't even 50%, it was 30%, which is a lot less than, you know, than the average gender population.
The ideal, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The average gender, how it's reflected in society, how many women are there versus men in society, that's 50% generally. So, yeah, saying that women are only about, what was the current lineup, 20-odd percent?
Yeah.
It was only 20-odd percent. It's not even 30% that was achieved. So what you see in cabinet now would be a cabinet that does not reflect the general population, how the general gender composition is like in society. Mm-hmm. So that raises the question of whether or not women's interests are represented well enough. There is a ministry, but what about other policies, financial policies? Are they considered adequately, given that they are almost 80% of the cabinet is male, so the voice, the perspective they come from is a male perspective, mm-hmm. without taking into account a lot of women-centric issues, perhaps, rightly or wrongly. So, yeah, that's a concern. And it's not even that there are no promising women in parliament. There are, in my opinion, enough promising women to meet that not even a high standard of 30%, and it couldn't be met. So it's quite disappointing.
Yeah, I think it's important to highlight that, because right now people are saying, oh, we have to meet that 30% target, you know, as if that is the ideal. So it's important to say that that 30% is a minimum. Mm-hmm. It's not like, that is not like the standard that we should, you know, even be looking at. Yes. But even sadly to say that even the minimum requirement we can't even meet as of now.
Yeah. And, you know, just to get rid of those biases of like, oh, the person who's most qualified will get the job. Are you trying to tell me that there are no women who are qualified for these jobs? You know, people completely disregard.
Are you saying that there's not enough women qualified enough to meet that 30% target versus all the other men who were chosen?
Yeah.
It's that can be a commentary on how you think women are good at something or bad at something, and your biases when you think that. So
bias, exactly. Yeah.
I think this is a huge debate on meritocracy, because the way you define or interpret that word meritocracy is very important, because obviously in this day and age you're not going to find, okay, I hope that you're not going to find anyone who will outrightly say women deserve to be at home. Like, you know, they will say like, yeah, of course, we will put women in power, but everything has to be based on merit, right? But the conversation cannot stop there, because you have to ask, what are the requirements, or how do you interpret that word, like merit and meritocracy, mm-hmm. right? So if your standards of measuring merit is based on traits or characteristics or measurements that are engineered to fit a certain group of people, mm-hmm. then it's going to be extremely hard for you to fit other people into that box.
And that's
right?
not meritocracy. If you say, if you price leadership traits that are generally male-based, popularly considered to be male-based, but when females display that trait and they are penalized for it, say being outspoken, making aggressive decisions, and there are studies that show that women are penalized for speaking up and things like that. So if you penalize women for those traits that you consider desirable, it's an unachievable target. Mm-hmm. It's a standard you're expected to, women are expected to meet that they cannot meet because they're penalized for meeting those standards. So it's a vicious cycle in that sense.
Yeah. And you know, there's just people like Amelia's friend who just say that, you know, women have to be don't know how many percent better than a qualified male for the job. Okay, lots of frustration there. But I'm speaking today to Amelia Sharif. She's the Chief Executive Editor of the G Blog, and Chang Mei Yen. She's with Young Women Making Change Malaysia. And both of them are part of a forum which is happening this Sunday called Is Malaysia Baru Safe for Women and Girls? And after this quick break, we're going to find out what's going to be discussed at that forum. You're listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Amelia Sharif. She's the Chief Executive Editor of the G Blog, and Chang Mei Yen. She is with Young Women Making Change Malaysia, and both ladies are involved in the forum that's happening this Sunday, which is called Is Malaysia Baru Safe for Women and Girls? So tell me about that forum, Amelia. You know, what's the main thrust of this whole discussion? You've got some exciting panelists, you know, aside from Mei Yen on it.
Yeah. So this forum, like you mentioned, Is Malaysia Baru Safe for Women and Girls? We seek to unpack issues relating to like this new Malaysia Baru. What are the changes that we expect, or have we seen any changes that would make the spaces, whether or not private spaces or public spaces, more welcoming for women and girls? So when I say welcoming, I don't mean just making it safe, but I mean making it empowering mm-hmm. for them to operate and do their day-to-day activities, or even like, you know, achieve their dreams and goals that they set out for themselves. So this forum, we have a very interesting lineup. We have YB Maria Chin, MP for Petaling Jaya. We have Sumitra, Executive Director of Women's Aid Organization. We have Ustaz Wanji speaking also. Then we have Mei Yen here with me. We have Jean Venetia. She's with Challenger. That's Change led by the young generation Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we have Dayang Kuziana. She is, I think, the finalist of Icon Trans Women for 2017. So all these people will be speaking at the forum and discussing this issue.
You're also going to be talking about different issues that are affecting women, right? And I think one of the main topics that's on top of that list is sexual harassment.
Correct.
And why was that considered a focus?
I think
Well, not just because sexual harassment is extremely topical, but because at the G Block, we recognize that sexual harassment is a very important issue that we need to discuss. And I personally believe that, you know, the amazing work that has been done by groups of people like Young Women Making Change and also like, you know, JAG itself. So we just want to use this platform that was given to us to also highlight some of the issues and also the things that was discussed. Mm-hmm. Because so far, when you do like readings with regards to like sexual harassment and the way it has been dealt in Malaysia, it's also like quite frustrating. So like,
why is that?
Well, I think the last time I checked, that was in 2010, because we have the code of practice on the prevention and eradication of sexual harassment. This is like on top of the sections on in penal code itself. I think Mayan would be better able to talk about it later on. So based on this code of practice that was introduced by the Ministry of Human Resources in 1999, well, first of all, this code has no force of law. But as at August 2010, only 400 out of 450,000 companies have adopted this code. So it tells you that sexual harassment is something that is very prevalent in the workplace, right? And within that space itself, we hope that employers would do the necessary to address these things when it happened. But when you do further reading on it, so obviously when you ask, is something being done? Is there a kind of framework, right, to regulate or deal with this matter? So yes, as a code of practice. But when you do further reading on it, you realize that there's not many companies that have adopted it, mm-hmm. or there's not many companies that have any kind of framework in place within their organizations to make sure that when an employee is sexually harassed, that she has the necessary recourse to complain and, you know, being you know...
to action, basically.
Action, yes, correct.
Okay, so and tell me a little bit, Mayan, about, you know, you are involved in that proposal mm-hmm. of that
That's
law.
Right.
Tell me a bit about that. What's been happening?
So we've been scrutinizing every aspect of basically how a law protecting sexual harassment victims should be drafted. So we took about a year trying to redraft it very intensively.
I can imagine, yeah.
Considering all aspects of from reporting to the end result, which is resolution, and considering how to protect people in general from being sexually harassed in the first place. So it's a very wholesome bill that we've came up. As to process-wise, submission, we're actually at the very end stage of our drafting.
Okay.
So it's about maybe 5% left to touch up, just one or two places before we meet the Ministry of Women to finalise and submit the bill. Mm-hmm. And after that, I believe the Women's Ministry would look at it as well, suggest amendments. There's going to be discussions, and especially with the AG Chambers as well, who will be fine-tuning the drafting of it. And then if they think it's okay, it will go to Parliament, and then debates will be there, and then hopefully it'll be passed. But it's not guarantee that our bill will definitely be passed yet.
Okay, so it's still not a won battle as yet.
It's not a won battle.
Okay, and there's something interesting, you know, about religion coming into sexual harassment, and there was something that you mentioned to me, Amelia, about there's a perception that it exists as it's a Malay Muslim issue. I did not realize that.
Yeah, actually, this was also pointed out to me earlier this year that a lot of people have this perception that sexual harassment is more prevalent in like certain communities. And the way it was described to me is that it's more prevalent in the Malay Muslim community. I also heard that it's more prevalent in the less educated and low income group. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of misconceptions surrounding sexual harassment and who, like this image of a perpetrator. Do you get what I mean?
Yes.
And I think that's very it's very important that we address this misconception, because sexual harassment happens regardless of like the person's education background or like income group or even like race and religion, like
gender sometimes,
or gender, right? So I think this is one of the things that we want to discuss. So we want to make sure that when you look at sexual harassment as an issue in Malaysia, that everyone recognize that it is a nationwide issue that everyone has to care about and everyone has to talk about in terms of creating a space, a safer space for all Malaysians.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's also, you know, talking about the limitations of existing laws, isn't it? You know,
correct.
And does it protect minority groups, the different communities who, yeah, some of them who are being vilified by,
yeah,
the people
and
in power?
You heard stories of like, for example, trans women, when they make police reports and they, you know, ended up
not being protected at all, no. or even like demonized,
humiliated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you know, they just, well, I think it's because of this concept that a lot of people don't understand the concept of gender identity.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of like deeper and underlying issues there, but I think we could start by at least acknowledging victims and making sure that they have the support system that they need when they are, when they need it.
Yeah, and I think there's just so much more need for, and I know we keep saying this, but for awareness, for, you know, some form of literacy over the, you know, the needs of these different communities.
A culture shift in general, because I think at the root of sexual harassment is disrespect and its power, because when you harass someone, when you say certain things to someone, when you send them some pictures, when you demean them in essence, and that's the problem with respect. You think you have power over them, so you disrespect them, and then it's a cultural shift, and it's a cultural shift that needs to happen to stop. The root of it is respect towards women or people weaker or minorities in general. I think that's a conversation that has to happen separate from legal action, separate from bills being in place by the government. It's a mindset shift. It's a conversation.
Yeah, and I guess it's a power thing as well, isn't it? It's always a power thing. I mean, like with that orthopedic surgeon, for example, that was blatant abuse of power. So we're trying to put the bill through, so that's hopefully going to happen soon.
Yeah.
Do we have a time frame for that, if at all?
Unfortunately, we don't really, because that would depend on the ministry as well and how fast they want to expedite it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And another important thing that you're going to be talking, of course, is about safety. How do we create safe spaces? We always talk about that on this show, and I know people raise their eyebrows or, you know, kind of roll their eyes if we talk about safe spaces. But it's, I think only if you're in a minority group, you'll understand how important it is.
If you can afford to roll your eyes when people say safety, that means you're privileged and you don't have that issue. So check your privilege before you roll your eyes, right? Because people who face these issues on a daily basis, it is important, it is imminent, they face it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So the least we all can do is that, because sometimes we are the victims and sometimes we observe these things happening around us. And I think at the G-Block, we have always taken this like approach to make sure that the least you could do is to help someone when you see it happening around you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see someone crack a joke that is sexist, that is, you know, borderline sexual harassment or is sexual harassment, you go ahead and tell that person that's not funny and that is sexual harassment, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the times we stop ourselves because it is confrontational, because it, you know, people will say like, you know, chill, why do you have to take this thing so seriously?
Mm-hmm.
You even have people labeling, you know, people who point out these things as feminazi and things like that, right? But I guess some things need to be said and it is best that we say it out loud. Consent literacy is also something that we need to look at.
Yes. You know, just speaking on safety, I don't know if you ladies saw a lady asked on Twitter, you know, what would you do if men had a curfew at 9 p.m.?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? And the responses from that were like, I would go jogging. I would walk my dog at night. I go grocery shopping once I put the kids to bed. You know, it's just something that is taken for granted, isn't it? I'm assuming men here, that how unsafe we feel all the time. If we're going to go somewhere, we need to make sure it's safe for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if something were to happen to you, the question always is,
what did you do?
Yeah. What were you wearing?
How is it your fault?
Yeah. You know it's an unsafe neighborhood. Why would you go alone at that hour?
Yeah.
No, it's dark. You shouldn't go outside.
Yeah.
We can go on.
But I guess that's also, you know, kind of forming what's going to be discussed at the forum. You know, how are we going to make this country of ours safe for women?
Yeah, I think for the forum, it will be like a discussion on, because everyone who will be speaking at that forum is in some position to affect change, I believe. And so I want them to discuss or put forward to the audience, these are some of the things that you can do to create safer space, right?
Sure.
Because a lot of the times when we talk about creating safer space, we look at, you know, people, women's organizations and say, hey, draft the law, do something, you know, create legislation, right?
It's your job,
So I want to move away towards the end of that discussion to say that, okay, you know, law, we can put the law in place. It is happening. But in the meantime, does not mean that we sit back and do nothing, right?
Yeah.
So that will be the conversations. I think it would be interesting to listen to, like, all the panelists talk about
well, based on my interactions with victims, here are the things that you can do. You know, those kind of conversations towards the end of the forum.
Mm-hmm. And another thing would be, you know, how can we as Malaysia stop attacks against persons, you know, based on their sexual orientation, for example, their gender identity, their expression? You know, how do we even start that, right?
Yeah, this is the whole issue with kindness. And I think this is a theme that Art for Grabs wanted to bring forward this time around. So one of their public session is an exhibition debate with the Malaysian Institute for Debate and Public Speaking. And the motion that will be debated by the debaters is should kindness be legislated? So I think it's very interesting because you have all these like very young individuals. I think they're students between the ages of 16 to like early 20s. And they will talk about what is the best way to instill kindness amongst Malaysians. Because a lot of the times we take such pride in saying that, you know, Malaysians are such a kind nation. You know, we're so polite. We're so loving. We're so friendly and things like that. And then, you know, you get in a car with someone and then realize, oh my God, road rage. And then, you know, you listen to someone else yell something. And it begs a question. Are we really that kind, right? Yeah. So that will be an interesting discussion as part of Art for Grabs as well. But I think for the perspective of the forum, we will generally look at issues like bullying in schools, the way we treat women or minority groups. I think those are very important as well.
Mm-hmm. And another very important topic that I wanted to mention as well, of course, is child marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm very sure that that's going to be addressed as well.
That will be.
Mm-hmm. In the forum, because I don't want to create a discussion that is very touch and go as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why we put the attention on sexual harassment. But I think child marriage has been something that the GBOG has been like talking about since forever, and a lot of other women's organizations as well. And I have to say that the way the government is dealing with this issue is, I mean, it could be better, and I'm being polite here, right?
It's disappointing. I'm sorry. That's my
opinion. It is very disappointing, because why is it so hard for you to understand that when you say a child can't consent to anything in his or her life, but when it comes to marriage, he or she is ready for all of that emotional
lifelong commitment.
Yeah, and lifelong commitment, right? And it's also funny because we are having this huge debate about lowering the voting age in Malaysia.
Exactly.
And then there's also the minimum age to buy cigarettes and alcohol, and all of this minimum age being implemented, you know, left, right and center. But somehow we think that these kids are capable of, you know, getting into like this kind of very intimate relationships. And I read somewhere that even when people have grown into like adults and they, you know, they get married and, you know, they get into like sexual relationships even with their husbands and their wives, it has such a big impact in their lives. Like, I read somewhere that women cry after, like, their, you know, on the first night of their marriage because they felt like something is taken away from them. And I mean, it's not right, because I mean, this goes back into the narrative that, oh, when, you know, women have like their sexual intercourse, they lose something and the guy gains it. Mm-hmm. That's wrong. But provided that it might take some time for us to fix this mindset, how do you expect a child to be able to deal with all of these things on their own? I think it's I don't know. I mean, even thinking about it, I feel so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I think an easy way to think about it is, okay, imagine a child in your life. It's the most easy way to hit home. Imagine a child in your life getting married at the age of 11 or 12, even 14, and imagine how you feel about that. So I'm really wondering what advocates of child marriage would think in those situations. Would they be okay if their kids get married that age? Would they be okay if their sisters, their anyone they know who is a child to get married at that age, or even themselves getting married at that age? How would it impact the child? Would the child be happy to have such a lifelong commitment, and in many cases their education disrupted?
Exactly.
So I just cannot see the logic behind it.
Let's just also point out that we have statutory rape laws.
Yeah.
And somehow when that person is married to this young kid, that is
alright.
Okay. That is alright. Like, you know, it's very confusing.
And for me, I think one of the things I hate the most is that these older men who do marry these young girls is as a way to get them out of poverty.
Yeah.
You can sponsor their education.
Yeah.
If you really cared about them, you don't have to marry them at the age of 11.
I'm just going to go ahead and say, child marriage is state-sponsored
pedophilia. Like, yeah. That's what it is. And we have to put a stop to it.
Agreed. So this, I'm guessing, is another topic that we are going to be fiercely debating at the, well, discussing at least at the forum.
Yeah, we will mention it.
Okay. So this is of course part of a bigger event, as you mentioned. It's the Kuala Lumpur Alternative Book Fair.
Yes, this is the Art for Grabs and KL Alternative Book Fest 2018.
Okay, what are some other events that are going to be happening there?
There are three public sessions. I've mentioned the exhibition debate, organized by the Malaysian Institute for Debate and Public Speaking just now. Mm-hmm. And then there's the forum organized by the G-Blog. And the third one is this session called I'm Not the Only One. So this is a youth manifesto session that aims to create a more inclusive Malaysia. It will be held on Sunday from 7 p.m. till 8:30 p.m.
Okay.
Interestingly, this will be officiated by Dato' Ambiga. The public debate will be officiated by the Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister Department, I think YB Hanipa, I think. So all of these things are the public sessions, and I strongly encourage members of the public to come. If you don't have anything better to do or anything productive to do this weekend, come and let's all be part of these important discussions of our time.
Okay. And if anyone's interested to participate in the forum, is there an entry fee? Is there a registration process?
So all of this is free admission, no mm-hmm. entry fee. You can be part of the conversation because there will be Q&A sessions after the forum. I believe there will be a polling that will take place after the debate as well. So that's very interesting. So you can hear what other people think about it. You can also voice out your opinions afterward. Right. On top of that, there's also one session on child marriage. It's called Happily Never After. This is organized. Yeah, very, very, very,
very
apt name.
Yeah.
This is a forum by the Bar Council Child Rights Committee. And they want to talk about education for parents and children. They want to talk about creating awareness on repercussions of child marriages. And also, ultimately, this will lead to the ban of child marriages and maybe how we can work towards achieving that objective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There are also other interesting talks and events going on at the Arts for Grabs. So
yeah, I think there are 50 art and craft booths. Yeah. There are 25 indie publishers and NGOs. So a lot of things happening. So you can check out all of these things on their Facebook page and on the event page itself. It's called Art for Grabs and KL Alternative Book Fest 2018.
Okay. And everything is free. So, you just need to come and it's happening.
And I should also mention that all of this thing is done in collaboration and with the support of UNICEF Malaysia, who has been, actively talking to all of us to make sure that all these events talk about the important issues for example, child marriage and protection of women and child in Malaysia.
Awesome. Okay. And I think it's International Day of the Girl, right?
Yes. The forum is in conjunction of the International Day of Girls.
Okay. All right. Any last message you'd like to leave us with the ladies before we go?
Right. I think that in this era of Malaysia Baru, let's all play a more active part and be part of all the discussions surrounding us, because this is not the time for us to just stay at home and, pretend that everything out there is okay.
Yeah.
Let's all be part of this conversation and let's all do what we can to create a better and safer Malaysia.
Just because Pakatan Harapan has won the election, it doesn't mean that it's a given that women's rights are going to be better protected, and we all need to be alert, vigilant, and advocate for better protection of rights for women and girls in this country. Mm-hmm. So continue to be active, continue to speak up if there's something wrong, and continue to hold our lawmakers accountable.
Yeah.
Yep. I think so too. So part of Art for Grabs and the KL Alternative Book Fest 2018, and in collaboration with UNICEF Malaysia, the G-Blocks Forum, Is Malaysia Baru Safe for Girls and Women, is happening on Sunday, the 6th of November, from 1 to 3 p.m. That's over at the Boulevard in Publica. And as Amelia and Mayan mentioned, there's so much more happening, I think, over throughout the weekend,
yes,
isn't it? So just check out their Facebook page, the Art for Grabs Facebook page, for more information, yeah?
Yes.
All right. And if you like more information about the G-Block, that's the gblog.org. So thank you again, ladies. I've been speaking to Amelia Sharif, the Chief Executive Editor of the G-Blog, and Chang Mayan from Young Women Making Change Malaysia. And we were discussing if Malaysia Baru is safe for women and girls. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Feminist Fridays interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.